You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, a group of nuns made headlines 4 years ago when they went on a road trip through several states as they took on social justice and economic issues. We talked to Sister Simone Campbell, who leads the Nuns on the Bus tour and is kicking it off in Madison.
First, when we think or talk about caregivers, we usually assume that we're talking about adults caring for maybe sick, disabled, or elderly family members. Caregiving, frequently difficult and taxing, people take up the responsibility because they love and want to care for the person who needs that help.
But what many of us may not know is that there's a group of people who also take up the task of caring for a family member, children. And while there's often support for adult caregivers, many children get missed by agencies that can help.
Connie Siskowski joins us now. She's president and founder of the American Association of Caregiving Youth. Connie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Well, Connie, can you tell us how common that is? This is something we don't see that often in public, in the media. How common is it for children to be serving as caregivers?
It's much more common than anyone would imagine. So the only national study that we have showed, which was released in 2005, showed that there were at least 1.3 million children ages 8 to 18 in that role. And when you think about how our country has changed since that time, we know that, and we have seen many more children. We have more single-parent households. We have more grandparents raising grandchildren. The grandparents get sick. The economy has forced households to move together. We have people living longer. We have more advanced technology given at home. And we have more managed care. And often with more managed care, there is less home care provided.
And Connie, as I understand it, this is not just your job. This was your story, too. You were one of these children who provided care for a relative. Can you share that story?
Sure. So my parents were divorced at a time when parents really didn't get divorced. And we lived with my grandparents, and my grandfather was my buddy. He was my hero. He worked until he was 84, and then his health really started to decline. And it was just a natural thing for me to do, to take care of him. My mom worked a lot. My grandmother just didn't really seem to have the compassion, the caregiving gene, and my brother was involved with his lab in the basement or whatever he was doing. So, like I said, it was my honor and my privilege to help him, but I don't think I was really prepared because I was like 12 years old to do some of the things that he needed me to do in terms of personal care, in terms of I slept in the living room to be closer to his bedroom in case he needed something. And at this time, he was needing medication during the night. When I got up to give him his pill at 2 o'clock in the morning, I was the one who found him no longer breathing. And to this day, I can still feel the coldness of his skin. So it was at a time when trauma in children was just really not recognized. And so it had some long-term effects on me, no longer having, you know, my hero, my buddy, the person who in my family I probably love the most around anymore. And, you know, so that whole trauma stuff really impacted me personally, and I didn't realize it until I was a much older adult.
Well, so many questions come up about the challenges a kid in this situation could face. And let's start with this idea of you at age 12, and we're talking kids a little older, maybe even a little younger, having this enormous responsibility put on them. How do kids cope with this on their own, dealing with maybe an ailing parent or grandparent as you are?
Well, a lot of times they don't deal with it well, and so they become angry, they become frustrated. In fact, in our work, one of our first introductions to one of the students was because she was involved with juvenile justice. Her mom had to call 911 because she was hitting her out of her frustration. They also become isolated because they're not able often to have friends at home or participate in after-school activities. Their academics can suffer. there was a great commercial that said, you know, when you're worried about what's going on at home, it's impossible to think about anything else. And so our original studies back in 2002 when I got my PhD showed that kids were missing school, they weren't completing their homework, they were having trouble focusing, or some combination of those three. And that was more than 4,000 of a group of more than 12,600 middle and high school students.
Talking to Connie Siskowski with the American Association of Caregiving Youth, talking about kids who, for one reason or another, step up into the role of caregiver for maybe an aging or ailing family member. Connie, we don't have a lot of research in numbers, you were saying, about how many kids are out there in this situation. And I'm guessing a lot of these kids are just under the radar, not getting help that they might need. Why is it? Why don't we know how many people are in this situation?
Well, it's not like you go to school, particularly when you're in middle school, and you don't want to be different and say, hey, guess what I did for Grandpa this morning. There's a big fear factor, fear of families being split up if people, you know, in the system knew what the kids were doing. And there's also a sense of pride. You know, we're supposed to take care of this ourselves. Some people don't want other people to help at home. And often there's not the realization of what the child is going through, particularly if that child sees the impact on their own parent, say it's a grandparent, maybe with Alzheimer's disease or whatever, that has moved into the home. And they can see the stress of that parent, and so they want to help, and they don't want to share what's going on with them to cause more worry or even more financial burden if the child needs something special for school, or even we've had kids share eyeglasses because they didn't want their parent to know that they were having trouble seeing.
And Connie, your organization and you are trying to provide help for kids in this situation, mainly in Florida. What kind of things are you doing to try to help them out?
So we work in partnership with the schools, and that's where we identify the kids first in sixth grade. And we do a series of skills building groups beginning in sixth grade, which is a foundation 6-week course, once a week. And then continue with a different curriculum up through high school graduation. So we support the kids in school from sixth grade through 12th grade. We help them to reframe and to value themselves, what they're doing, not only in terms of their family, but also to society. We also, in school, do lunch and learn activities where we bring in community resources. And that's open not only for our kids, but often school staff or kids not yet in the program come up, because when we go through the eligibility process, it's a day and time, and life can happen on all those other days. And then we do a home visit for families that will allow us, and that means a social worker will go in to do a home assessment to see what other things are needed. We've helped four families get clean water. We found kids with complaining about their backaches, and we found that, you know, this one boy, for instance, and his single mom were having to lift his brother in a wheelchair in and out of the house because their stoop was too high to have a ramp. And we were able to find somebody to make a ramp. And then we do fun activities. So we have a camp, we call it Camp Treasure, to help the kids know that they're a treasure and to discover the treasure within. We do cooking classes, a fishing trip, holiday celebrations, different activities that are both fun and educational, because, you know, play is an important part of adolescent development. And if that's missing, you got to catch up on it sometime later in life.
We're talking to Connie Siskowski. She's president and founder of the American Association of Caregiving Youth. We're talking about children who take care of sick or aging family members.
And we'll be joined in just a moment by a Wisconsin professor who specializes in researching children in these positions. And we want to hear from you. Is this your story? Or do you know someone who was a child who took care of a family member? Call us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. You can also send your thoughts to talk@WPR.org.
We'll continue the conversation in just a few moments here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Right now we're taking your calls on children who serve as caregivers. Millions of children nationwide take care of sick or elderly family members, but many people are unaware of the issues facing kids who are in these situations.
We want to hear from you. Was this your story? Were you a child who took care of a family member? How did that affect you? Or if you work in schools or social work, is this something that you encounter? Do you encounter it often? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And right now we're picking up the conversation with Connie Siskowski. She's the founder and president of the American Association of Caregiving Youth. As a young person, she took care of her aging grandparents and now runs the organization to raise awareness for the topic.
And we're welcoming now Melinda Cavanaugh. She is an assistant professor of social work at the UW-Milwaukee. Her research focuses on the issue of caregiving youth. Melinda, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
So do we have any sense of how many people in young people in Wisconsin are serving as caregivers?
That's an excellent question, and unfortunately not one that we can answer. One of the things that is missing in the conversation about young caregivers is how many kids out there are doing it, not only nationwide, but on a state level. It's not something that's captured in any sort of caregiving surveys, census data, or any statewide level data. We don't have that. What we do have really is anecdotal data from, you know, school systems and from several of the different research studies that I've done in the state of Wisconsin. You know, that really indicates it's probably a fairly high number, proportionate to even more so than what we have nationwide, around that 1.4 million.
And Melinda, are schools, are organizations out there trying to provide the kind of help that Connie was talking about earlier to try to reach out to these students and then to offer some kind of services?
You know, what's interesting is that when you talk to social work and we talk to school personnel on a one-on-one basis, they acknowledge that these kids exist. They are aware of them being out there and participating in caregiving. One of the kind of limitations or one of the barriers is that there's no systematic programs for these youth. So while the school social worker or the teacher may certainly be aware of it and they may want to do something individually, school systems or programs aren't out there developing broader programs and ways to support these kids. So it's really what we're seeing is more on an individual level rather than a programmatic level, which is really one area that we really need to tackle to be able to address the issues around these children on a much more broad level.
And Connie, I want to bring you back in on this now.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for schools, even if it's just something ad hoc, to give some kind of outreach to these kids?
So actually, we have, and we're in the process of expanding our affiliate network, where we look to partner with existing nonprofits and essentially a nonprofit franchise model, where we can provide our resources and information and development tools, as well as resources that we have worked on, that we know work, to help programs in other states. So there is a survey that's just been done down in North Carolina in Chapel Hill. There are folks out in L.A. Working out of L.A. Children's Hospital. New Jersey is for the first time awarding a youth caregiver in their state. an award for their work during National Family Caregivers Month. New York has a couple of programs, and there's a relatively new one in Detroit. So little by little, we're making a difference, mm-hmm. but we really need a national campaign to raise awareness. And we welcome people to contact us to consider becoming affiliates. One of the challenges of working with a school system and not a nonprofit is time, so that caregiving goes on 365 and school is not open. So that's why we prefer to partner with a nonprofit. Although, however the kids can be recognized and supported, we feel at this point is better than nothing at all.
We're talking about youth who serve as caregivers. We have Melinda Cavanaugh with us, UW-Milwaukee Assistant Professor of Social Work, and Connie Siskowski, we're just hearing from her there, founder and president of the American Association of Caregiving Youth. We'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Peggy is on the line in Madison. Peggy, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call.
What do you think, Peggy?
I just happened to be leaving an assignment and turned on the radio and was thrilled. I actually could feel my heart pounding when I just heard you mm-hmm. talking about the topic. I'm an adult and grew up in a family where my father was physically disabled for many years, most of my childhood, used a wheelchair and had some physical issues going on, and later in life had some strokes that really he became unable to work at that point. We were fortunate up until then that he was able to work. And so I also wanted to comment that sometimes even if the child is not the main caregiver, their life can be heavily impacted if the other parent is the main caregiver. And I think, you know, the family pitches in, you end up giving care, but really my mother is the one who was the main caregiver. And that puts a stress on everyone. It puts a stress on the mother who knows she's not able to spend as much time with their children as she would like, and of course on the children who feel a little bit selfish when they have a need, knowing that there is a parent that sometimes has to and sometimes is given the priority in the family.
Peggy, thanks a lot for that call. Melinda, do you see that in your research, whether we're talking about a child being a main caregiver or part of the story, that there are these conflicts, the pressure it puts on the whole family?
Absolutely. I appreciate so much of what Peggy said, because what that shows is that caregiving and illness is really a family issue, that it's not just that one person is providing care and the other person exists in the family. It's that we see a lot of that in our research, particularly in a study that I did recently in a Latino community on the south side of Milwaukee. A lot of the 77 children who identified themselves as caregivers didn't necessarily identify as being a primary caregiver, but what they did talk about is expectations and stress on the family when the illness was present and the other adults were occupied with caregiving. They were participating in care, but they were also feeling stressed about the loss of interaction, about the lack of communication, the lack of understanding about the disease itself. So caregiving is one piece of it, but not having a cohesive family unit around that experience is another piece of it, particularly when that second parent or the other adult in the home is the main caregiver or also working outside the home.
And Connie, Peggy used the phrase that she felt selfish when she had what I assume was an ordinary kid need, but she felt selfish. And I imagine that's a common thing. People feel selfish or guilty, these kids, for being kids when they have this huge responsibility.
Right. And so that's one of the things that we try and instill in our kids that we work with is self-care. And it doesn't just have to be a parent or a grandparent. It could also be a sibling. We're seeing a bigger increase, particularly with the increased diagnosis of autism and on that spectrum of children who feel apart because the parent, and rightfully so, has to give time, attention, and resources to the child who is not well.
I want to bring in another caller. Thanks to Peggy. We've got Kevin on the line in Janesville now. Kevin, hi.
Hi. As a middle school teacher in some very economically challenged communities, I've seen many of my middle school older siblings being the primary caregiver home at night because parents are working two and three jobs or single parent homes. Is there any numbers in the data to suggest how many of those kids are out there?
Kevin, thanks. Melinda, is that something you found in your research, kids not caring for parents or grandparents in this case, but for their younger siblings?
Absolutely. It's not something that has been such a direct focus of my research, but kind of in a secondhand way, we do see that kids are responsible. They're carrying a tremendous amount of responsibility, whether there's illness in the home or not, because, you know, someone asked me recently, what is one of the biggest issues with children as caregivers and family parental illness? And I always talk about the economic issue. And it really comes down to economics, what we can afford to provide, what other access and services can we afford to get? And you often have, whether there's caregiving or not, both parents working outside the home. So then the child steps into that, not caregiving for the parent, but caregiving for the child, the other sibling in the home. And that very much, again, relates to this economic issue of what other services or resources can we rely on? And when we can't, we rely on the child. So whether they're caring for the parent or the child, they're stepping up in a way that is often out of their developmental understanding or their developmental comfort zone, which is a stressor on that caregiving youth.
Thanks a lot to Kevin for that call. Connie, you're trying to spread the word on what's really a hidden problem, under-the-radar problem. Do you feel like we're making headway there? Are people recognizing this and talking about it?
Yes, little by little, but it's something that we have to continually raise awareness about, so I so much appreciate the show and opportunity. One of the local government officials said to me one time, well, Connie, maybe they don't want to know, because if people know, then maybe we have to do something about it. So it's time that people do know, and we are seeing more recognition of youth caregiving, and even Melinda with her research that probably 10 years ago would not have happened.
Thanks to both Connie and Melinda for joining us here on Central Time. Connie Siskowski is founder and president of the American Association of Caregiving Youth, and Melinda Cavanaugh is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Her research specializes in caregiving children. Both joined us today to talk about kids who serve as caregivers and their families and the effects it can have on them. I've got a link, by the way, to some more information. You can find that over at the Central Time Facebook page. And if this is your story, if this has been a part of your life, you can share that there. Again, share your story and find more information about caregiving youth over at the Central Time Facebook page.